You know those ancient Egyptian granite vases? The ones that Ben Van Kirkwick, Christopher Dunn, Adam Young, and Matt Bell love to talk about all the time? The ones that are the subject of tons of debate. Yep. Well, those are really interesting to me because of the way that debate's gone down. I mean, the vase scan team, sensing the initial skepticism to the claims of these are more precise than could be made by hand, well, they did what was said on the tin, right? What their name says, that they scanned the vases. And the data they brought to bear was, well, it created a nice little gray area because it's not as precise as a modern machine shop would make if they were really trying to make it precise. But it is a lot more precise than you would expect from some dude with hand tools thousands of years ago. So the skeptics, well, the cynics, I consider myself a skeptic, but the cynics, they shifted the debate. No longer do they discuss the measurements of the vases. They discuss the provenance of the vases. Where did they come from? Are you sure these are actual ancient Egyptian granite vases? Are you sure these weren't made in some modern-day machine shop? Are you sure these aren't fake tourist items in order to steal money from people that don't know any better? There are a lot of fake artifacts that have come out of Egypt over the years, so it's not an insane question to ask. But is it a really valid position to take? What is the provenance on these things? What kind of issues do they face with that? What are the laws around this? Clearly we do repatriate some artifacts, so what's going on here? Well, let's talk about that a little bit. That's why you came, right? Hi, my name is Dan, and welcome to the Dunking. Now, for those of you who have never heard of these vases before, they are small vases made out of stone. Now, there's varying degrees of hardness of stone used, but the softer stones aren't the ones that are considered important by the vase scan team or the other people in the ancient high technology. They're looking at the ones like granite and other similar really hard stones. They also look at the pieces of quartz in them. Like, look at this vase here. You can see the pieces of quartz in the vase, right? And that is what they call occlusions in the matrix, or inclusions in the matrix, however you pronounce it. Man, again, I read this shit from books, man. I didn't learn this stuff from some dude telling me. And basically, this creates a difference in the material. It's harder, it's softer. When you're cutting it with a tool of any sort, it's going to be, things are going to change when you get to this little patch of quartz as opposed to the rest of the rock. So these things right here do create a lot of a speculation as to how they could have been made. Now, many of these granite vases are extremely accurate, with tolerances that don't quite reach the machine age, like I said earlier, but they do far surpass other handmade items from the period. So we do have something of a mystery here. But that doesn't really sit well with the debunker types, the people that go out of their way to deliberately prove something wrong before they've even gotten into the matter. They just decide out the gate that it's bad. In other words, as I said earlier, cynics instead of proper skeptics. And the way that they react to these vases can be very telling. Now, first we saw people reproduce methods for drilling holes and shaping granite with copper and sand, and a lot of time. Now, this is helpful to the overall endeavor of discerning the origins of these artifacts, so I do not discount this at all, even though, quite frequently, it is utilized or brought up as a way to beat the vase scan team out of the arena entirely. It still is good data, and it's important to consider. It is also important to note, however, that the accuracy that they bring to bear is nowhere near the accuracy we see on the vases that the vase scan team has highlighted, which has resulted in many people claiming the provenance of the vases is problematic. And some of these pieces are of unknown origin, and some of them have very good provenance, much like museum pieces, which we'll get to in a minute. These pieces vary a lot in whether or not we know exactly where they came from, how long ago they came from the ground or was quarried or brought out of Egypt or whatever. The fact of the matter is, the vast majority of artifacts that are in museums and in private hands today came into private collections and came in out of Egypt long, long before there were any sort of safeguards. But we will talk about the one big law that changed all of that. Now, the major law that matters is actually a treaty. It's the 1970 UNESCO Treaty on Items of Cultural Patrimony, and it made it illegal to trade artifacts between most of the nations of the world. Now, this, of course, assumes the artifacts are authentic. I mean, reproductions are common, and in the case of Egyptian artifacts, They've been common for centuries now. But if the artifact has good provenance and was legally acquired before 1970, it is legal to own, buy, and sell even today. Now, anything that came to the United States after 1970 but is still legal for a private individual to own, that's going to have lesser provenance than the stuff from before. And that might sound sketchy to you, but this isn't sketchy to the museums. In fact, if they gain new artifacts today, it falls into the same rules. They can fudge things a little bit by cooperating with other governments and museums and stuff, but if they put things in their museum that they own, they have to fall into these same laws. And as a matter of fact, when I was in New York to film for the Camp podcast with Mark Gagnon, I went to the Met Museum, and what I saw there was actually the inspiration for me to make this video. Many of the exhibits in the Met had descriptions of when and where they were from and how they were discovered. Quite often, the word presumably was before the word discovered. The provenance of many of the pieces in the museum is questionable, just as questionable as the artifacts sold by reputable antiquities dealers. Of course, these artifacts include the vases we're discussing, and this is the first thing worth mentioning when it comes to the provenance argument. The vases are on the same level as many of the artifacts in famous museums as far as provenance goes. Despite arguments claiming they are suspect, they are no more suspect than many things proudly displayed, studied, and spoken of in discussions on our ancient past. Quite often, like the vase Adam Young has that came from the Austrian Empire's ambassador in the late 1800s. Now, he called it the Czechoslovakian ambassador to Egypt back then, but during those days, the Czech people were part of Austria. At any rate, the provenance of that vase, as recorded and verified by the dealers Adam purchased it from, goes back over 100 years. There's a basalt vase for sale at the time of this recording that traces its provenance back to the Kennedy Galleries of New York, an antiquities auction house that operated from the 40s to the 60s, the 1940s to the 1960s. This is far enough back in time, there's really no financial incentive to, like, fake these things as far as I can see. I mean, 10 years ago, you could buy one of these for $2,000, all right? Now they're going for 50, but 10 years ago, it was like $2,000. It's not very much money for how much energy would go into these, especially 80 years ago, right? I mean, the 40s and 50s, how hard would that be to make? 100 years ago, how hard would that be to make? So, to me, it doesn't seem like the best investment for somebody who was going to be the forger of an artifact to just make this kind of nondescript granite vase that nobody was talking about until YouTube was a thing. I mean, look at these canoptic jars. I mean, they're amazing artifacts. They kept the guts of the blessed dead inside them as part of the embalmment process. And they're made of softer stone than the vases the scan team focuses on, and they look more, well, Egyptian, don't they? And this is really where I start to think the majority of the vases are not forgeries. Why would someone who's capable of shaping hard stone like that not at least put a freaking cartouche on it? Like these vases, like this vase here, it's got at least some Egyptian writing on it. Like, there's tons of them like that I saw at the Met, that it's like that little bit extra would make it distinctly Egyptian. Or a canoptic jar that's way softer stone, and they just like get a little bit of a sculptor to add a little cat's head or some shit on top, right? All of a sudden, this is Egyptian. But these things, they just, unless you're looking at it from how did they make these? These are very nondescript. They're very bland. They don't look Egyptian. They look like a vase. They look like something somebody would put a flower in and put on a windowsill. Unless you're like, man, how did they get this out of this material? Until the mystery is spoken of, these are the kind of items that I think, why would somebody even bother to think of forging when they could make something that is even the same thing? Like I say, they could take that exact vase when they're done with it and just chisel a rudimentary cartouche, just a couple of hieroglyphs, a freaking Eye of Horus. And all of a sudden, it stands out if these are fakes to be sold. I mean, these were so nondescript for so long that they were handed out to foreign dignitaries and the like with little to no recording of this ever having happened. They were just stone flower pots to the vast majority of people. The second time I went on the Joe Rogan podcast, I mentioned a picture I didn't get a chance to share. It's this picture here. It's a reconstructed wall in ancient Egypt in one of the ruins that has a piece of granite vase in the wall as part of the fill dirt that they used to remake it. So many of these vases exist that they're broken and laying in pieces all over the place if you know where to look. Now, the exact numbers are unknown, but the majority of the vases that we find are alabaster or soft stone, much softer than granite. But many of the granite vases are found, and they look almost identical to the ones that the vase scan team is using in their scans. And why that might seem incidental to you, I'm here to tell you it is not. A few months ago, I spoke about the Rutz Clovis, and this is the largest Clovis point that's known to exist that's in private collections. The other ones are all, they have impeccable provenance, and they're owned by Native American tribes, or they're still in the ground. The Rutz Clovis, when it was discovered back in the 50s, was discovered by some rancher, and he put it in a shoebox, and it was with a bunch of other arrowheads, and it was made a little bit differently than most other Clovis points. It was way bigger than any other Clovis point that was known at the time. So it was discussed, but considered pretty sus, right? But then the Wenatchee Clovis site was discovered in the early 1980s. And the Wenatchee Clovis site was very close to where the Rutz Clovis was discovered. And it had a whole bunch of those same style of Clovis points, big and the same style of carving. So all of a sudden, even though nobody knew exactly where the Rutz Clovis came from, nobody knew exactly where the Rutz Clovis was dug up from, the provenance was considered good enough that that thing sold for $300,000 at an auction. Well, after fees and everything, the guy that got it paid about $300,000. So, and this is like 12 years ago. I was lucky enough to see the artifact in a museum that he had loaned it to for it to be seen, unless they're lying and it was a reproduction, which is a possibility, but it looked pretty legit, and they did say it was a real thing. But anyway, my point here is this. The Rutz Clovis is a Clovis point that the provenance is shit. It's one of many hundreds of thousands of arrowheads that were picked up by some random dude in America and stuck in a shoebox and then like sold on the open market much later. And most of those are completely lost as to where they came from. But because this looked like other ones and because it had been found before them, these two things combined together to give it impeccable provenance. All right. The details that it had that were a big deal were not a big deal before it was discovered. So nobody knew to fake these things. And that's the same with these vases. When you see these vases that are 100 years of provenance, okay, whether it's the Czechoslovakian ambassador or the Austrian ambassador, and you want, as a quick aside, the people that pick at that are being a little pedantic, aren't they now? But when you have one that's that old, nobody was talking about these features then. For it to be have those features of extreme accuracy and whatnot, that's the kind of thing that it just like this Clovis point, it kind of lends itself to being, it makes it more legitimate. It makes it seem more reasonable. Why would somebody fake something that nobody cared about back in those days? Now, collectors are usually more skeptical of this sort of thing than academics, and for obvious reasons, and collectors spend their own money. Matt's spending his own money. Adam is spending his own money. The museum? The museum curator is spending the museum's money, okay? So it ain't quite the same sort of thing. And then we talk about the auction house itself, the place, the antiquity dealer, the person whose job it is to say, this is a real Egyptian vase that I'm selling you. The problematic situations that would occur for those individuals if they were just to knowingly sell crap is massive. I'll give you a salient example. Recently, a huge scandal erupted in the Pokemon card collecting world. One of the original designers of the game put up for sale several cards that were from the playtesting and concept art and early design era of the game. None of the cards he offered up for sale were ever available in stores. All were only available to people like him and a few promotional giveaways in the very early days in Japan only. So these were extremely sought-after cards, and the market, well, of course, it's skeptical. So the man, he took the cards that he found and sent them to be graded. And after many of these cards sold for tens, even hundreds of thousands of dollars, after being approved as real cards from the grading company, it came out that at least half of them were fake. It was determined that the printer they were made with was a more modern printer, and this was fake cards. And while the old Pokemon designer who sent the cards in, he claims that he had other people involved, and but he's in a lot of hot water, right? But the grading company that he used, they're completely fucked. No one will ever grade cards with them again. No one will ever use them again. They are done for. In addition to that, they are potentially facing, almost certainly facing, hundreds of millions of dollars in fucking lawsuits because the people that bought these cards bought them on the assurance that this grading company said this is legit and it wasn't. This is a huge problem and it will probably destroy this company completely financially and like by the name. By this time next year, I doubt that company will be a thing. Imagine if some similar scandal rocked the antiquity houses. Places who include certificates of authenticity and the provenance history of every piece they sell. It would ruin them, destroy not only their reputation, but their entire financial world. Then look at how many pieces these dealers have for sale, and go look at what made in Egypt reproductions go for of like Canoptic jars on eBay, like $5,000 and stuff, man. These people, these auction houses, if they are getting their hands on repros, they can sell them for a profit and do just fine without calling them legitimate. And there's no reason, there's a huge risk and very little reward for them to be knowingly accepting reproductions. And the fact is, there's not a whole ton of these on the market, and a lot of them were known to have existed. So the reality of it is, it doesn't look like very many of these are fake. I'm sure that some of them are. Matt Bell himself told me that he had to return one, and that another one that he showed me one that he thinks is probably fake. And here's the deal. There's going to be people that are artisans that are going to try to make things like this, even if it takes them, you know, 22,000 man hours of labor or whatever. They're still going to try it and stuff. But the ones that are, that have provenance going back 100 years and stuff. Say you're a guy whose job it is to like fake an Egyptian artifact. There's tons of Egyptian artifacts that have been faked throughout history. Scarabs, for example, are very high on that list. And there's a whole big deal as to how they would fake scarabs, but they pick scarabs because they are readily identifiable as an Egyptian artifact. A vase is just a vase, man. There's nothing on these. The ones that these guys scan over and over, the ones they bring to bear are literally nondescript as fuck. And if you were going to be faking artifacts to sell, you would not be making things so plain Jane boring. All right? You would give them a little bit of panache, just a tiny bit. Doesn't need to be a lot, just a little bit. Now, again, that's just my personal opinion. But I have dealt in the collecting community quite a bit. And I do have to say that collectors tend to go for things that have flash. Mario and Zelda sells for more than tennis. Unless you've got the box, because the box for tennis is rare. But that's a whole different story. So this does not mean that all the vases are authentic. But it does mean that it's lazy, in my mind, anyway, to debunk them by just saying, well, we don't know the provenance for certain, because just like the gold that, you know, people were mining gold 1,000 years ago and they were picking it up off the ground pretty easily. 5,000 years ago was even easier. 10,000 years ago was easy as hell. Now it's not so cake. Same thing with Egyptian artifacts. You go ancient Greece, ancient Rome, you go to these places 2,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, there was shit laying all over the place. 150 years ago, shit laying all over the place. And those are in museums with poor provenance, poor recording of how they were found, where they were found, and that is normal. That's typical because of the early days of archaeology were much like if you were, you go to a video game museum now or a toy museum, these don't have historians, and they have collectors, man. They just have a guy like me in there who's got a hard-on for freaking He-Man toys or freaking Nintendo games. And so he'll tell you how this one has this sticker and this one has this screw and this one has this stamp and this means it was made there and blah, blah, blah. And these are the guys you go to for that information. It's not the academics grew out of these guys. In the archaeological world, and we're going to see it in a few years in video games and computers and other technological things that are becoming history like that. But I digress. My point is there's a touchstone there. You can see it. The archaeological world stemmed from the antiquarian collecting world. And it is what it is, right? I mean, that's not exactly noble, but it is what it is. It is important to note, in my mind, that the antiquarian is more passionate than the academic. And when the antiquarian says, "I think this is legit," and the academic says, "I'm not so sure about it," ask them both for their reasoning and see what they have to say. The academic quite frequently will just rely on a broken chain of custody while they sit and write papers with broken chains of custody artifacts propping up every position they hold. Anyway, that's all I got to say about this. Thank you very much for watching. We'll see you next time.